Kaya Wanju. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. As a young man, Matty Hannan explored the world, sinking roots in the Southeast Asian region. Here, he made lifelong friends, became parts of families, and fostered a connection with the land that was ultimately severed when he had to return home to Australia to kick off a career, in inverted commas. The towering metal structures that became the home for his monotonous office life played a major role in his an emerging mental illness that saw Matty at a crossroads. Continue on with this corporate career life and possibly lose a sense of himself, or seek a future where he lives with, learns from, and embraces the land that we live alongside. So begins his Road to Patagonia, the title given to Matty's documentary about his journey from Alaska to Patagonia, a 50,000-kilometre trek that sees him encountering magnificent surfing locations, wildlife of all kinds, and forming a bond with a group of horses who help him on his journey. Along the way, romance emerges and changes his life. The Road to Patagonia is a deliberately meditative film, and as such it becomes a soothing experience as viewers learn from the people who live with the lands that Matty and his partner Heather Hillier trek along. This is not some kind of white cultural tourist narrative either, as Matty and Heather never seek to become saviours or people who co-opt the lifestyles of the people they meet. Instead, they seek to join the wavelength of the spiritual harmony that the people they meet exude. There's an optimism to the Road to Patagonia that comes across with the way that Matty Hannan talks about his life. In the following interview, he talks about the challenges he faced making the film and what it's been like to implement this spiritual experience that he has gained into his modern life in the Byron Bay region. The Road to Patagonia and Matty Hannan are heading around Australia on a national tour until the 19th of April 2024. Head over to their Facebook page for more details. There is a link in the show notes. Thank you as well for listening to this episode of The Curb Podcast. To help keep The Curb independent, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to show your support from as little as $1 a month. Let's have a listen to the trailer from The Road to Patagonia, followed by my chat with director and star Matty Hannan.
I know I really like him.
Well, I like her, and I'm pretty sure she likes me.
I mean, we're travelling on motorbikes, so it's not a perfect scenario.
Just live and live outside and be free.
Nosotros como mapuche o las quenches no queremos que llegue porque sería la destrucción total de cada.
Los milicos me cortaron el pelo con cortapluma. Nunca me habían pegado tanto. Me encerraron. Vi morir personas al lado mío.
A mí me condenaron por 630 días de cárcel.
Kind of regretting this whole decision, actually.
Y eso destruye. Destruyendo.
Welcome. Thank you very much for joining me to have a chat. I appreciate it. I'm curious, what part of the world are you coming from this morning?
Yeah, right now I'm in beautiful Byron Bay, Australia. Yeah. I don't live here anymore. I was here for about 4 or 5 years, and then we moved down the coast a couple of hours to a little town called nice. Bellingen.
What's it like living in that part of the world as well?
Quite diverse. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of interesting polarities with it. You don't need to go into the beauty of Byron Bay because we all know how famous it is around the country. So I don't think I really need to say anything more about that. The community is really awesome around here. I do love it's a bubbling fermentation of all sorts of creative people and especially not that I've been here very long by any means, but it's interesting to see this new wave of entrepreneurship in the town. A lot of people, I guess back in the day and before my time, it was obviously a famous hippie kind of destination and traveling destination and that sort of thing, whereas now it sort of seems to be full of creative entrepreneurs and people that are striving to produce something interesting or team up with other interesting people. And so it's always great. You're always meeting interesting people and conversations, and I do love it.
Part of the reason I'm interested is because, well, a lot of what Road to Patagonia is about is how the world around us influences our state of being. And it's interesting you mention as well the past of Byron Bay, and the past of all of the locations that you visit play such a vital role in your story. And I'm curious if you can talk about that relationship of nature and the landscape and how it's enriched you and the history that's on the land as well. Obviously, it's such a powerful thing to experience. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. In Byron, I suppose, it was great because the film was edited, like we shot it over a period of years on the adventure itself. But then when we came back, I had no savings left. I had no funding to finish the film or anything like that. And so Heather, being an avid food grower, she kind of steered us towards Byron Bay as a famous place for regenerative agriculture and supportive communities and farmers markets and all that stuff. And so we ended up here, and I was also super happy to come. Beautiful waves, and who wouldn't want to live here? Yeah, and so we ended up woofing actually on a beautiful farm called Haders Hill Farm and living in a caravan there for about 4 years, which is where I broke the back of the film editing and going through all this mountain of footage. And I suppose during that time, we were listening to the local community radio and all the interesting programs on that, as well as going to community events and, you know, great people that have come from around the country and around the world with, I suppose, similar ideals of, you know, why we were all there. And that was like a beautiful environment to sort of foster their freedom to sort of explore, you know, non-mainstream ideas or ideas that might be frowned upon maybe in kind of more conservative circles and environments. And even like one sort of aspect of the editing process that really got me to finish the film, and I feel like is where the kind of, there was an epiphany moment where I learned about animism around the world through a podcast called The Emerald by Josh Schrier. And that was this beautiful moment of inspiration for me where I was like, oh, wow, that's what all of our interviews are all about. And this is exactly what everyone's been saying. And I just needed someone to just like, you know, take a step back and sort of show me. And so that was a big moment. And then at the same time, I actually started microdosing a really tiny little bit of magic mushrooms as well, which obviously living in somewhere like Byron Bay is not considered a strange thing to be doing. And that was incredible in the trajectory of just motivation, having the confidence to make big creative decisions and cull footage and just steer the story to where my heart really wanted to take it. Prior to then, I'd been very struggling to keep up the motivation in front of the screen, I suppose, and actually do the 8 hours of editing a day that needed to happen, but also like scared to delete footage because that was a scary thing to do, you know. But then if you don't do that, you're never actually going to bring it down to a cohesive story. And so, it was never some kind of hallucinogenic experience by any means. It wasn't like I was getting high every day. I never, ever felt any kind of conscious sort of effects of the magic mushrooms. But it was this beautiful tool that somehow helped me focus and somehow gave me this creative confidence to just take it where I knew I wanted to.
Let's go back to the very start then, when you're kicking off on your journey. At what point did you know that you're going to be making a film?
It was when I set off from Melbourne. I had high hopes of making a film, and I don't know what film really was in my mind back then. I had a few friends that had made indie feature documentaries, and I remember at the time thinking, man, those guys, they all took so many years to do it. No way would I ever want to do that, and no way would I yeah, it just doesn't need to take that long in my mind. And so I thought when I set off, I'd make a little movie, some surfing stuff, I'll interview some interesting people, and at the end I'll edit something together. I'll give myself 6 months to edit and then I'll put it on Vimeo, or at the time, you know, back in the day, that's what a lot of indie filmmakers would do, I suppose, before, you know, I wasn't really thinking like feature film, big release sort of style. But yeah, that was kind of my initial thinking. And then it transformed into, you know, things just kept happening. And so it was by the end, a couple of years later, where I realized we did have something to share with the world. And so I, yeah, buckled down and said, no, I want to do this properly, even if it takes a lot of time, because we've got something bigger than ourselves to share.
Well, it's a beautiful film, and it your story of like the realization that you need to basically get out of civilization, escape the city and things like that, I find is such a, it's a relatable thing, but not very many of us actually have the impetus to get up and get out and explore the world and reconnect with nature. And I'm curious if there was, like, in those initial stages, were there any moments where you went, am I doing the right thing? Is this the right path that I should be following? Or was it always the feeling of, no, I need to get to Patagonia, this is the right journey that I'm on?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because when I left Melbourne, and the whole time in the lead up to heading to Alaska, I was on top of the moon at that point. I was like, I'm going, I'm doing it. This is, it's eventually happening. I'm getting myself out of here. And not that I was in a, mentally, I was in a bad place. But the moment I arrived over in Alaska, it all just flipped 100%. And then I was like, whoa, oh my God, I'm surrounded by grizzly bears out here, literally, like it wasn't a figment of my imagination. I literally was. It's the densest grizzly bear population in the entire world is where I spent the first couple of weeks camping alone, trying to find this particular wave in Alaska. And so that was absolutely terrifying. The wolves, the just everything, the mysterious noises in the night while you lie there alone in your tent in a forest that looks very spooky for an Australian, because the forests over there, all the spruce forests, they're the classic kind of northern hemisphere fairy tale forests where the witches and the, you know, all of our kind of cultural stories as Europeans come from that part of the world. And so I just remember thinking the forest looks so witchy and like spooky for me. And then on top of that, I was like, oh man, I've just thrown everything away, my whole life back in Melbourne. It wasn't that bad. What was I worried about? Now I've told everyone I'm going to do this trip down to South America, and do I even really want to do it? I'm going to have no money at the end of it. What am I going to do at the end? And all those big concerns. And that was a kind of, I suppose, a bit of a rite of passage, a couple of weeks at least, I think, of really having a high level of self-doubt that I'd done the right thing by going off on that journey. I think and then the other time my motorcycle was stolen at one point, and that was a big hard hit as well that really made me second guess if I was doing the right thing. But it was funny how quickly those feelings of self-doubt left me when I gave myself time to sort of just settle down into it. I think I was also just coming off the rhythm of a schedule and an energy that didn't suit me living in the city. Not that there's anything wrong with that by any means. It's, you know, the cities are such fantastic, bubbling little places of inspiration and great things happening there. But it was frenetic for me. And so I think I was coming down a bit off that. And it wasn't until I actually grounded myself with the slower pace of life and camping that I felt more confident in it.
Then I'm curious, you're talking about spending a bunch of time editing the film and you know, scouring through all of your footage and stuff. And in the film itself, you talk about addressing cultural biases and the you know, each of the locations you visit and having your own existence basically questioned in some capacity because of the traditional custodians of the land that you're visiting. And I'm curious, over the years now that the film's wrapped up and it's heading out to the world, How have those cultural biases been changed or addressed now in your mind?
In my mind? Yeah, I think so. I think I definitely think that way. I don't know if my lifestyle is, you know, it definitely isn't. You know, I live in Australian modern society. I have a smartphone. I'm plugged into the internet as much as anyone. And I mean, I do have friends who have managed to unplug. But in my line of work as a filmmaker, as a storyteller in this modern age, that's a really tricky line to walk, I think. So yeah, I'm definitely embedded in that side of things. There's a whole bunch of things in our lives that we do try and keep as core tenets of our lifestyle, and that's growing a lot of our own food. And spending a lot of time just at the rivers and the forests and the mountains and the beaches and that are close by to us. And I feel like that really helps keep things in focus. And I'm also very regularly in touch with my good friends over in the Mentawai Islands, which is ironic because it's via smartphone, and I'm chatting. Actually, I don't really chat directly with my really close friend over there. Is a shaman. It's a Sikere is the local name for the shaman, and a medicine man, a really incredible traditional culture over there that still exists in relation with the rainforest. And I think they're just some of the most beautiful examples of humans I've ever met, and just love them so much. And I feel like, yeah, just staying in touch with those guys helps me keep a little bit of balance in my life when I, whatever, you know, get too self-absorbed in my work or something like that.
That's understandable. As the last question, one of the things that's on the screen is, and apologies if I've not written it down properly, but the Australian Earth Alliance, if you can just give a quick kind of summary of where people can find out more information about that, would be great.
Yeah, yeah. So Michelle Maloney is, she's an environmental lawyer who, she's such a weapon of a lady, such a force. Sadly, underfunded like a lot of these non-profits, but she's diving deeply into how modern society can change legislation in order to recognize the living biosphere, essentially. And so it comes across as a little bit of a kooky concept to people that haven't really heard of it before. And she does so much more. I wouldn't want to try and sum up all of her work, but she's looking at to refer to one of the recent examples of her work. She was with the Blue Mountains local government area. They were the first people in Australia to recognize their LGA as its own person, as an entity that has its own rights, in the same sense that a person or a corporation does in our modern society. And so, law is definitely not my my world, so I won't try and explain it too deeply. But it's essentially about giving rights back to the biosphere, back to the flora and fauna, and just offering it, an olive branch of a chance to be able to speak for itself in our legislative world.
And I'll make sure to share a link with readers as well so that they can actually go and find out more details. But it's been wonderful to be able to chat with you, Maddie. I've really appreciated the film and enjoyed hearing your journey along the way. So I look forward to seeing where you go as a filmmaker as well and what stories you're going to tell.
That's very kind, Andrew. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to meet you, mate. And I can see that big stack. Are they DVDs or books? In the back
Blu-rays and DVDs and books and a mixture of everything.
Amazing.
Long live physical media. Wow. Yeah.
So cool. Yeah. Have you seen most of them?
No, of course not. No, you buy it and you hope that you get the time, but yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, awesome.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Likewise.
Mate. Yeah.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks again for listening to this episode of The Curb Podcast. To help keep The Curb independent, visit patreon.com/thecurbau to show your support from as little as $1 a month. Every little bit helps. And make sure to check out The Road to Patagonia as it heads out around Australia until the 19th of April 2024. More details, of course, over at thecurb.com.au. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.